Kulk. Are we live, Dave?
We're live.
All right. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today for our regular scheduled meeting as far as the date, but the time we've moved to 2 o'clock, and I think Commissioner Crisman may address that a little bit. I don't really have any particularly open comments about cases, but I would like just to highlight a couple things that are going on around the state and the region. Right now, we've got members of our Lake Night Council, as well as the coal industry, is out in Denver. The EPA has set up some hearings, if you will, listening sessions again about the impact that a CO2 rules. So we have members of North Dakota's coal industry and Lignite Council are out there. I've certainly been in contact with them and may have even been out there today if it wouldn't have been a meeting day. And I also know that my former colleague, Commissioner Tony Clark, who's now a FERC commissioner, testified recently in front of Congress with some very, very, very good dialogue about how these CO2 rules may threaten the reliability of our power grid, that things that we've talked about in this commission many times. So that's going on as we speak, and I still believe that there's a lot of things that are going to happen, one being that when these rules become final in June of 2015, a lot of states will file their lawsuits. We're still working with our investor owns. We've got meetings set up in mid-August about the impact to individual companies, as well as still focusing on the reliability of the grid. So these CO2 rules are kind of in the backdrop right now of what's going on, because it's a lot of other things, I guess, are in the forefront of the discussion, but there's a lot of work taking place in that right now. On my favorite topic, call before you dig, did not happen in North Dakota. I'll say it one more time. This happened in Minnesota. But recently, in Barnesville, Minnesota, which is just about 45 minutes east of Fargo, we had an individual installing fiber optic cables. They damaged a natural gas distribution line. The gas filled up the home. The home exploded. Luckily, no one was killed. It did involve Xcel Energy, so Mark Nisbet had some comments in there. But this went back to a company was out there doing work on a fiber optic cable, hit a gas line, and once again, the importance of using call before you dig, and just a stark reminder that the potential that's out there for things to go wrong. So, anyway, that's my opening comments. Commissioner Crisman.
Thank you. You kind of covered some of the CO2-related issues that I was going to talk about. So I'll just take a moment, a personal moment, to thank the commissioners as well as everybody else who has been patient and let this meeting get postponed to this afternoon so I could take this morning off and go to a funeral for my aunt. Her name was Bernice Herman. And as I sat there today and looked at her and her family and some of her friends and other relatives and just that she just so perfectly exemplifies the pioneer spirit that generation brought forth and really made this state into the wonderful place that we get to know and enjoy today. And so I thank you for the opportunity to participate in that.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I'll just play off your comments on the CO2 just a little bit. Brian, the commission is having the workshops in later this month, well, later next month, I guess, the 20th or 21st, 19th, is that when it is? Yeah. To gather more information from the companies we work with and all the generators in the state on how these rules stand to impact them to better educate our comments. We also have a reliability conference set up for the September 10th in Fargo, and Commissioner Clark will be there. Hopefully he'll share some of his comments that he shared with the EPA. And we're working with the NERC, the Reliability Corporation, overseeing reliability for the country, and have heard back now from Jerry Cawley tentatively that he's hopeful he can participate. He's the head of that group. And so the focus of that, I think, will be on our capacity, generation capacity in this region, in this state, in this region, broadly, and then specifically within that, some discussion on how the EPA rules stand to impact that. So, again, educating ourselves, getting more information from everyone we regulate, but also an opportunity to educate the public on these issues as well. As we see, the country's electric industry is being transformed, and it's affecting our state at the very time that our state our entire state economy is going through a major transformation as well. So it's a challenging time in North Dakota to be asked to restrict some of the emissions and change our electric generation resources at the very time where we need more generation. So it's going to demand a lot out of all the companies that are serving the public. I'm confident they're up to the challenge, and we'll be working closely with them to help them meet those needs best we can.
All right, anything else?
That's it.
Thank you. Okay, we have a few items on consent today. I'd move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. And I don't have anything on the regular agenda today, so I'll go right to Commissioner Crisman. If that's okay, Randy. Threw you off there, didn't I?
I did. I knew that, but I kind of forgot that, that you had a clear slate. Okay. RC1, I move the commission approve revision number 24 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK9503 held by Falkirk Mining Company to change the mine plan, post-mining topography, and reclamation schedule for the remaining unmined areas within the permit area and to update other sections of the permit. I also move approval of the self-bond rider that increases the amount of the self-bond covering the consolidated bond area at the Falkirk Mine.
Second.
On December 9th of 2013, the Falkirk Mining Company submitted the application for revision number 24 to surface coal mining permit number 9503 for its mine area near Underwood. This revision makes significant changes to the mine plan, post-mining topography, and reclamation schedule. Permit 9503 contains 29,310 acres. Mining in the northwest part of the permit area was previously scheduled to begin this year, but that's now being delayed until 2018. Falkirk submitted affidavits of publication showing that the newspaper notice was published in the McLean County Independent and the Bismarck Tribune for four consecutive weeks in both of the newspapers. We also notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to the revision application. A new worst-case cost estimate covering the consolidated bond area, covering this and other permits at the Falkirk Mine, was also submitted as part of Revision 24. A new cost estimate for bonding was needed due to the change in pit sequence and timing. The new minimum bond amount was determined to be $85,954,201. The self-bond and surety bond riders were submitted by Falkirk to increase the total bond amount for the consolidated bond area to an even $86 million, which is deemed adequate at this time. The self-bond rider increases the self-bond amount to $77,400,000, which is 90% of the total amount, an increase of over $8.5 million. The other 10% of the total bond amount is a combination of surety and collateral bonds. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision and the bond increase and respectfully recommends that they be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there a further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number RC-14-313, notice of violation number 1401 issued to Dakota Westmoreland Corporation at the Beulah Mine to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty.
Second.
Notice of violation 1401 was issued to Dakota Westmoreland Corporation on June 5th of this year following a May 28th inspection of the mine, the Beulah Mine. It was issued for failure to properly implement and maintain water management plans in Permit 80603 at the Beulah Mine. During that May 28th inspection of the Beulah Mine, Guy Welch noticed that a dike had washed out. It was a bale dike, and that sediment-laden water was flowing over reclaimed land. The water was flowing over that land, was being pumped from the west end of the gold pit. It was later determined that a berm that was supposed to direct this pit water to a sump had failed. About an acre of reclaimed land was covered up with a thin layer of sediment. During that same inspection, runoff from a graded area that was partially respread with topsoil and subsoil was flowing westward down a reconstructed county road ditch rather than into a sediment pond, resulting in sediment deposition in the road ditch. The road was diverting runoff down the ditch because a culvert had not been installed as indicated in the reclamation plan, and DeCord of Westmoreland was advised to put a culvert in this road during an inspection in March. The notice of violation was issued to Dakota Westmoreland on June 5th, and it was terminated on June 27th after staff determined that all the required action items were satisfactorily completed. In fact, most of the required action items were completed prior to issuance of the violation. Dakota Westmoreland did not request an informal conference or a formal hearing in this matter. So since an informal conference or hearing was not requested, the commission needs to assess a civil penalty and adopt a final order in this matter. The commission must consider four factors in determining the amount of the civil penalty, and I'll go through them one by one here. The history of violations is the first one. The commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day on the history of previous violations at the mine where the violation is found. Generally, the history of violations within the preceding 3 years is considered, and a penalty for history has not been recommended in the past if three or fewer violations have occurred in that three-year period. So based on the criteria we have used in the past, Dakota Westmoreland does not have a history of violations that requires a penalty to be assessed. The second factor is the seriousness of the violation, and the commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day based on the seriousness of the violation. This violation did cause some minor environmental damage, primarily sediment deposited on adjacent, reclaimed, and undisturbed areas, and so a recommended penalty assessment for seriousness is $500. Negligence is the third factor. The commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,000 per day based on the degree of the fault of the permittee. Dakota Westmoreland had approved plans for placing a culvert in the reconstructed county road to direct the runoff from a portion of the watershed to a nearby sediment pond. However, that culvert was not installed even after they were advised by one of our inspectors to place a culvert at this location in an earlier inspection. In addition, they did not discontinue pumping pit water after a berm had failed, causing the sediment-laden water to flow across the reclaimed area. So the recommended penalty assessment for negligence is $1,250. Finally is good faith. We may deduct up to $1,000 per day from the total civil penalty when a permittee takes extraordinary measure to abate the violation in the shortest possible time following notification of the violation. No deduction can be made for normal compliance, though. Dakota Westmoreland had taken appropriate measures to properly implement and maintain the necessary water management structures necessary to abate the violation. These measures were implemented even before the violation was issued, so we're recommending a deduction for good faith of $500. In conclusion, the Reclamation Division recommends that the Commission adopt this order that affirms notice of violation 1401 and assess a civil penalty in the amount of $1,250, which again is $500 for seriousness, $1,250 for negligence, minus $500 for good faith, and the order closes the case upon payment of the penalty.
We have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just thank our guys and gals upstairs for their good work on this, and for the companies that are out there listening, if our inspectors give you some advice, it would heed you to listen to it.
I would just ask Commissioner Christman on the negligence component, where we say $1,500 caused by negligence, but not through reckless, knowing, or willful conduct. Now, when they knew about this, because it had been found in a previous inspection. I'm just curious if you talk to staff and know why we didn't pick the higher fine here, because they did know about it, but it just didn't level, the degree wasn't severe enough, or what was the case there?
I didn't ask that question specifically, but my evaluation of it would be that the, you know, recklessness would come into play more if they knew this was occurring and just let it go on. In this case, they were told that there should be a culvert in there and they didn't get it put in, but it wasn't like at that inspection the water was already running and causing a problem.
And there was a rain event associated with this, I believe, a pretty substantial one.
There were some pretty significant rains up there, correct.
Okay. All right.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3 item. I move the Commission approve Knife River Corporation's request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for a total of 4 acres of reclaimed cropland that was redisturbed in to make drainage improvements and fill small settling features in the northwest quarter of Section 33, Township 131 North, Range 99 West in Bowman County.
Second.
On June 5th of this year, Knife River Corporation filed a request for the variance from the 10-year revegetation liability period for 4 acres of reclaimed land at the Gascoigne Mine. A variance from the 10-year liability period will allow the reclaimed acreage that was repaired in 2010 to be bond released with the adjacent reclaimed lands that were reclaimed in 3 stages in 92 and 94 and 2000. Policy Memorandum Number 20 allows us to grant variances to the 10-year responsibility period so that the responsibility period of the variance areas is the same as that of the surrounding reclamation tract. Variance areas must be small in size when compared to the entire tract, and the affected land must meet the reclamation success standards when final bond release is requested. The 4 acres of repaired cropland is part of a 56-acre reclaimed cropland tract. The rest of the land in that corridor section, just over 100 acres, was never disturbed. The variance is in actually 3 stages. It's for 3.8 acres of cropland that was redisturbed in 2010 to correct drainage near the north edge of the tract, and 2 separate depression areas which were backfilled with topsoil and regraded in 2013. Each of those involve approximately 1/10 of an acre. The variance areas have been in small grain production since the repairs were made, and the cropping and conservation methods practiced on the tract have been typical for the region. The proposed variance areas have been reviewed during several inspections made after completion of the repair. No issues were identified during the inspections and that suggest the variance not be granted, and the repaired area is part of a larger tract that is currently eligible for bond release consideration. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the request and respectfully recommends approval of the variance for 4 acres as allowed by Policy Memorandum Number 20.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-513, canceling warehouse license number 991, issued to Red River Commodities Incorporated at Brinsmade, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Brinsmade under license number 991 is discontinued effective August 1st of 2014.
Second.
On June 23rd, Red River Commodities of Fargo filed a request to discontinue business for its warehouse at Brinsmade. Red River originally licensed the Brinsmade in 97. They rented this facility from a farmer and operated it as a receiving station to receive sunflowers. The facility is empty and there are no outstanding storage obligations at this location. Red River also continues to operate a licensed grain warehouse, two of them, at Fargo and Jamestown. And just for the record, in case anyone else was wondering, Brin's Maid is west of Devil's Lake, kind of north of Minnewaukan, but south of Highway 2.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move RC5 to continue on. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-616, canceling roving grain buyer license number 3176, issued to Adams Group Incorporated of Arbuckle, California, and ordering that all North Dakota roving grain buyer activities be discontinued effective August 1st of 2014.
Second.
The Adams Group, as I said, of Arbuckle, California, notified the commission they will not purchase grain in North Dakota and asked that the roving grain buyer license number 3176 be canceled. In March of 2011, Adams Group filed the roving grain buyer license application in anticipation of developing a sunflower seed program here. The annual roving grain buyer license renewals and monthly reports filed by Adams Group showed no grain was purchased in North Dakota under this roving grain buyer license. And in case anyone is wondering where Arbuckle, California is, I have no idea and didn't bother to look it up.
I anticipated your question and I Googled it. It's off Interstate 5. I'm not sure Northern California or Southern California, but anyway.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And finally, RC number 6, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-618, canceling warehouse license number 1086, issued to Renville Elevator Company at Green, North Dakota, and ordering the business at Green under license number 1086 is discontinued effective August 1st, 2014.
Second.
Renville Elevator Company of St. Louis, Missouri, filed this request to discontinue business for its licensed warehouse at Green. This warehouse was licensed by Renville Elevator Company in 2002. All grain was removed from the facility, and it was sold to North American Salt Company of Overland Park, Kansas. It will not be used for grain storage. There are no outstanding storage obligations at this location. Renville Elevator Company does operate a licensed grain warehouse at Tolley, North Dakota. And my last chance for my love of North Dakota geography, Green is about 20 miles east of Kenmare along the Souris, and Tolley is just a little bit northwest of Green.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
My father-in-law managed the elevator in Tolley for a while, just so you know.
Oh, man.
It did not affect my decision, though.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That is everything in my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Randy, I thought you were going to say Green, North Dakota was halfway between blue and yellow, North Dakota. I'm glad to know where it really is.
I wish I had thought of that.
Oh, I always like the color wheel. All right, I have a couple of items here. I move the commission deem complete the applications of One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, corridor certificate, and route permit. I further move the commission issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, Targa Lateral Pipeline Project, McKinsey County, citing application case number PU-14-254.
Second.
On May 29th of this year, One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit concerning the construction of a 10.6-mile, 6-inch natural gas liquids pipeline in McKenzie County, North Dakota. We are today, in our admin portion, going to schedule a hearing for this. The commission found the applications are complete, and so we're ready to schedule a hearing on this matter. This pipeline will carry liquids removed from the gas stream at the Targa Little Missouri plant in McKenzie County, and it'll interconnect with One Oaks Garden Creek pipeline south of Arnegard. And that pipeline originates at the Garden Creek gas plant and moves south and west out of North Dakota through Montana and down into Wyoming. This project is about a $6 million project. Again, it'll carry natural gas liquids from the gas plant at the Little Missouri plant in McKenzie County, and that'll be its primary purpose.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
JF2, we're going to withdraw. We just got notification from the company that they're going to make some amendments to their application, so we'll withdraw this motion until the next meeting, at which time staff will have had a chance to look at the amendments, and we'll process it at that time.
Okay.
So that brings me to JF3. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Paradigm Midstream Services, North Dakota, LLC, Crude Oil Pipeline, McKenzie and Montrail Counties, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-14-620.
Second.
On July 17th of 2014, Paradigm Midstream Services filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate a 70-mile crude oil pipeline and other facilities to be used for transporting crude oil from Johnson's Corner in McKenzie County, North Dakota, to Stanley Station in Montrail County, North Dakota. They're requesting a certificate of public convenience and necessity construct, own, and operate the pipeline as a common carrier to transport crude oil from locations south of the Missouri River to transfer points located north of Missouri River. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by September 12th, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine this matter without a hearing. This is a 70-mile proposed pipeline. This is not a siting application. It's a certificate of public convenience and necessity. We haven't received an application for this project and in its siting of this project. It would have the capacity to carry 230,000 barrels per day of crude oil. It will be both a 20-inch and a 16-inch. And as I just said, the main purpose of this is to take crude oil, as I understand it, from McKenzie County in the area south of the river, transport up to some of the rail and pipeline facilities, particularly the Enbridge Sandpiper Pipeline, which is north of the river, and transport out of state from that point on. So it's just the first step in a pretty big project, and we'll take a look at it when we get it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Just go through the schedule one more time for those who might be listening. There's always stuff going on, but this next couple of weeks is, I think, particularly busy. Thursday, August 7th at 1 o'clock, we'll have our Railroad Service Backlog and Safety Upgrades meeting where BN, the CP, will have representatives here to talk about the concerns with the backlog and ability to move product, as well as some safety concerns. I know that both U.S. senators have weighed in on this, and so there's certainly a lot of discussion going on, but the PSC certainly would have a role in the captive shippers, and so we're very interested in that. That'll be taking place the 7th. The morning of August 8th is also a busy morning. Xcel Energy is coming in here at 9 o'clock for a follow-on discussion of the previous rate case where we basically laid out an allocation study in the resources, what might go to what state. So staff and the company are coming in and giving us their first brush on that. Commissioner Fedorchak might have more on that. That's her portfolio, but I know that's going to be a big day. Followed up by 10 o'clock that day, Xcel Energy is coming in and giving us their updates as to what happened in those outages that took place in Fargo the weekend where they had June 20th, 21st, where they had three outages that were, I would say, very significant in a short period of time. So we set that up, and so that'll be interesting to see how that discussion shakes out. There are many things in the rate case, the previous rate case, that laid out what the commission expected for them on reliability improvements. So I look forward to that meeting. And now I have not had a chance to talk to my colleagues about this, but I was notified earlier this week that the afternoon of August 8th, the Secretary of Energy will be in town, Secretary Moniz, I believe, for the Quadrennial Energy Review. And the details are just being developed. I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag, but they told me, so.
We talked about it at the last meeting.
We did, okay, good. So, but the way I understand it now is that the Secretary will make some comments at that afternoon at 1 o'clock. Our senators and probably Congressman Kramer will have some comments. There's some panels about how energy impacts might be affecting the region. I'm actually going to be on a panel at 3:30. So that's what I know about that. But we'll put that on the notice for all three of us. But I suspect unless we have – I know I'll be there, but I suspect we probably all want to be there if we can make our schedules work. It's the afternoon of August 8th, so it's a Friday afternoon. So, and as we continue on that, Commissioner Fedorchuk talked about the EPA workshops that we're having on August 19th. And I'd also add in – this is also another one that I haven't had a chance to talk to my colleagues about. The because of my role on the National Coal Committee – I always had this, a lot of discussion with Southern Company. They're the company that has the latest and greatest of CO2 capture and storage down in Kemper, Mississippi. I reached out to them. They reached back. They're coming up here for a tour of North Dakota August 14th and 15th. They want to come up and see what is available up here. It's one of the places in the country where they could build a second one of these. We've got the lignite coal. We have the need for CO2. We have the need for electricity. So, you know, I think I'm just using my position on the Coal Council to, you know, broker some relationships, set up some meetings with our investor owns and with the co-ops and just see where that discussion goes. But it's exciting that you get someone like that to come up here. Tom Fanning was up here a few years ago, the head of Southern Company. His number two, if you will, Kim Green, is going to be the senior person and part of this trip. But I think it's all part of how we're going to meet our energy demands. I think we're going to use a lot of natural gas. There's way too much coal on the ground not to use it. We'll continue to have wind development. But I thought that was very significant that they've committed to come up here and get a look around North Dakota. So a lot of things going on in the commission. I guess that really kind of lays out the schedule. I'd see if my colleagues have any closing comments before we open up for questions.
I do not.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Just one comment on the Southern Company folks. Since we're just chatting about it for the first time, do you plan on involving EERC?
Yes, it'll be EERCs involved, Lignite Councils involved, Basin, BNI, you know, all the energy people that I can think of we're trying to put together.
Perfect.
So it'll be the afternoon of the 14th, some type of tour around the state, and then the morning of the 15th, a roundtable, just discussion about Southern Company will present what they offer, and then the individual companies can make their decisions from there. But I think it's a good chance to get that first touch point with what's available in new technologies for using of CO2 as well as using our lignite resources.
Cool.
Okay, any questions from the audience?
The Secretary of Energy, where is that meeting going to be?
BSC.
BSC,
Energy Center.
Yeah. Should have guessed that.
Yeah.
In terms of the Paradigm Midstream Services, you said they haven't filed for a route. But given the fact they're going from south of the reservoir to north of the reservoir, it looks like, have they indicated where they're going to have that? Is the pipeline going to be under the reservoir? Is
Correct.
It going to be across the?
Yeah. It, based on the map that they provided with their application, you know, it's kind of a rough sketch. I wouldn't say it's, you know, they – I don't know how far along they've come with the easements or anything like that. So, but it does go under the river, yes. That's so their plan.
Does that complicate your role or – does it complicate their role in getting permits?
Well, it certainly complicates their role because they have to get a permit from the Corps to go under the river. I believe in the past we've done all of our work and put our orders on contingent on them receiving the permit from the Corps. And in the case of the Bakken Link pipeline, which does the same thing, they built the segment south of the river and are still waiting for the permit from the Corps. So they just haven't done the northern part of the river yet. These core permits take some time, and we don't know yet how far along they are in that process.
Do you know how far they are along with the construction of the Sandpiper pipeline in North Dakota?
I have not received any updates on that, but maybe staff, Julie, have you received any updates? They were planning on doing their above ground facilities and getting started in that, but I haven't received any updates. Oh, okay.
Commissioner Christman, you mentioned where Green is, but You know, of course, it's north of Carpio.
I should have mentioned that, shouldn't I?
Well, my father was born in Green.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he grew up in Carpio, so very familiar with Renville County.
Closed the rest of the loop. My father-in-law also managed the elevator in Carpio for a period of time, because that's just down the road from, of course.
Did you say your father-in-law?
Yeah. Karen's dad. Greg Nelson would have been there, I don't even remember when it was, a while back.
And now I'm not sure, but it may be that Green will have the only salt plant in Renville County.
I was going to ask about this. The salt plant, what do you know about it?
Just what I've already told you, yeah. they're out of Overland Park, Kansas.
Well, we haven't talked about potash yet. That's what I was kind of wondering. In terms of the Dakota Westmoreland notice of violation and the fine, do you consider that to be a major situation or significant?
I don't know how to really define major or significant, but I mean, it was serious enough that we adopted a penalty. It did not raise up to the level that we have imposed the largest penalty that we could have possibly imposed. You know, I think the perspective is there in that between the two, it's not like there was a great big washout or something like that that destroyed, you know, sent a bunch of land down the river or something. In each of the two cases, it was a light covering of sediment. In one case, covering about an area about an acre. In the other case, just a little bit in a county road ditch. And so I don't know how to really define serious or extreme for purposes of news cases, but I think just the amount, you know, 1 acre and then a little bit in a road ditch, I think, is the best way to explain it.
But it's fair to say that you felt the company handled it very well once they were aware.
Very well. As I think I had mentioned, most of the corrective actions were taken actually before we got the violation filed, and everything was completed very promptly. Within the same month as the violation was filed, the case was already closed, except for this part of it.
And Dave, if I could just share just a little my perspective on that. You know, my comments before about making sure the companies, you know, listen to our inspectors. Our inspectors are out there giving them advice to make sure when our inspectors see something that may be a problem, they give recommendations. The companies should listen to them. And so I think any time one of our inspectors comes back with a recommended NOV, I think it is a significant decision because they really do their best to work with everyone to make sure things are taken care of in a proper manner. So then once the NOV was issued by the staff member, if you will, the company jumped right to it and made those changes, and that's all good. So I think it was very taken care of very well once it got to that point. We want to make sure that when our inspectors are out there and talk to these companies, they give advice, the company should listen to them. And it's the tool, I would say the last tool that our inspectors have in their toolkit is to issue that NOV.
Well, since we're talking about violations or concerns, not necessarily violations, have you had any contact with Xcel about those power outages?
I have. I was in contact with Mark Nisbet right away, just to get a feel for what was going on. So after we basically set the date for the hearing, I will call here the inquiry, we haven't had any contact. So just what I know picked up right away was the Monday incident looks back to a potentially call before you dig, the Saturday and Sunday, some splices that maybe weren't up to snuff, but we've not really discussed it other than that initial phone call.
So you're expecting them to come out and say, this is what happened, why, this is the corrective action we're going to take?
Absolutely. The first discussion that Mark and I had was to make sure that he focused on his answers to us about why didn't the IntelliTeam switches work, what exactly happened so the redundancies didn't kick in, if you will. And this is just me talking here, but I know North Fargo is all torn up for road construction, so I suspect there'll be some tie-in to some of the things they were doing to create a patchwork of grid during all the constructions may have affected this, but we just want to see exactly what happened. There's been robust tree trimming up there, and so lots of things that this was not weather-related, but we want to make sure that the investment that we've directed the company to do is actually having a positive impact. And there have been outages since this one, but they were all weather-related from what I saw. So this one, I think, is just, why didn't the system work?
Are you getting any comments, feedback from customers?
Initially, we received a lot of feedback from customers. And I think it comes back to the same thing, is that there's that balance to strike between customers want power 100% of the time no matter what, but the customers need to make sure they have surge suppressors, and businesses should have backup generation, because we're never going to get to 100%, but we want to keep getting it as close as we can. I know that Xcel has reached out to a lot of those people that called here initially, and they've tried to, I guess, smooth things out a little bit. Stacy, I'm looking at you. We haven't had any phone calls in the last couple of weeks on that, to my knowledge.
It was just initially.
Initial the wave.
I will add to that. You know, it was, of course, frustrating to hear about the outages and get the comments from the upset people. But this past weekend, I spent some time in North Fargo and couldn't help but be a bit reminiscent about some of the streets that a couple years ago, before I was on this commission, I used to drive down some of those streets and think how pretty they were, because they were all canopied with trees. And now I was driving down them and thinking about how pretty they were, because those power lines are all cleared off real nice and should have no branch problems, you know. But because of this position, you know, I immediately noticed that and understood why those canopies of trees are no longer there. So they certainly have been working at it, but that it was a big problem that weekend.
It's a tough call, because as Commissioner laid out, the neighborhoods have changed. So we get a phone call saying that people are upset because the trees hit the lines and lines went down. So the company goes out and cuts everything back. Then we get phone calls that are upset because they've lost their trees. I mean, it's just it's a cyclic debate.
If I might chime in a bit, too, on this issue, Xcel is under a performance plan in this region, and so they're incentivized to have good reliability and very few outages. And if they do, they'll be able to get a benefit back to themselves. And if they don't, they have to pay customers who have, I'm looking at my notes here, more than three outages in the plan year, they get paid a credit of $50. So for 2013, 1,651 customers received a credit on their bill. And so I can't tell you right now how that compares to the year before, but this is something that I'm going to be looking at in our discussion with them and see how they are improving, because that was the whole purpose of this performance plan and directing additional resources. They've got a pretty significant replacement plan for some of their cables, older cables, and my understanding is that they're moving forward pretty aggressively with that. So when can we expect to see that completed and you know, some of these problems reduced? You know, it seems like they have been reduced since I've even come here, but for this last big incident. And so just better understand the company's plans and investments there and how they're benefiting the customers.
When we've asked the company to compare North Dakota reliability to Minnesota reliability and their other states, North Dakota has the most reliable of Xcel's power grid. So as a state, we're doing better than the other states, but we still got to strive for that 100%. Okay. Anything else, Dave? All right. Any other closing thoughts? Okay. We'll close the regular scheduled commission meeting. Thank you.